Honorable Minister, again, good morning. National Commissioner, good morning. I don't know if the Deputy Minister is here. Deputy Minister, are you here? Not yet.
Yes, I'm here. I'm here, Chair.
Yes, yes. You see, but now it's only your name. I don't know if you're there.
No, I'm here. Morning.
Good morning, Deputy Minister. Babawa, very good. It's cold and raining in Cape Town, and I'm afraid my network is not that good. So, honorable members, if you could bear with me today, weather is bad. We do have a quorum. Babawa, could you confirm that we have a quorum?
Yes, sir, we do have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Could you flag the agenda, please? Babawa, I'm waiting for the agenda.
Chair, can you see the agenda on the screen?
Yes. We will do the Central Firearm Registry, the modernization plan, and the building, the report on the firearm amnesty, the report on stolen firearms at stations, and then the Central Firearm Registry. So we'll deal with those reports on firearms. And then the last report will be on the forensic science laboratories. Babawa, do we have minutes? You send me minutes. Did I approve it?
No, Chair, you did not approve it for adoption for today's meeting.
I'll approve it later today so we can adopt it tomorrow.
No problem, Chair.
Thank you very much. Do I have a proposal for the adoption of the agenda?
Morning, Chair.
Morning, Honorable Peacock.
I would like to move for the adoption of the agenda.
Thank you, Honorable Peacock. Do I have a second?
Morning, Chairperson. I need a Moss. I'll second it.
Thank you, Honorable Moss. We are not going to have long speeches. Members still have to go to the House. Members have to be in the House physically. So we have to be in the House at 2. But the Central Firearm Registry and the Forensic Science Laboratories remain our Achilles heel. And the more we try to solve it, the more we seem to be digging ourselves further in the mud. So we have to see how we're going to dig ourselves out of this hole. Because the more you address your backlog at the Forensic Science Laboratories, you are unable to keep up with the new cases which are coming in. So we remain with an eternal backlog, and unless we have some radical intervention, we are not going to see this problem going away. Honorable Mapatsu is having problems with his electricity. He is moving to another area and will join us later. Minister, you can introduce the team and your presentation. Thank you, Honorable Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. As surely as you have greeted the Deputy Minister who is here, and I've seen the National Commissioner who is here, and indeed, the Cape Town weather is raining here. And we might, so far, our system is clear. I hope it stays that way, though it does show that it might cause some problems as we continue. The signals are there. But for now, we are here. So for presentation, I know for sure that we're expected in the House physically at a certain given point, as you suggested, to Chairperson, and surely we would not consume more time by talking, but maybe go straight to the presentation that must be led by the National Commissioner after he has introduced his team and begin to give us the presentations as they are tabulated by the agenda, Chairperson. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Through you, then I will hand over to the National Commissioner.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. National Commissioner, thank you very much, General Sotole.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, Minister, Honorable Members, the Deputy Minister, and our team. Chair, our team today in attendance, we've got Lieutenant General Livia, the National Head of DPCI, Lieutenant General Vuma, the Deputy National Commissioner, Corporate Support Services, Lieutenant General Masemula, Deputy National Commissioner, Policing, Lieutenant General P.P. Limpane, Chief Financial Officer, Lieutenant General Reed, Divisional Commissioner, Supply Chain, Lieutenant General Nzia, Divisional Commissioner, Human Resources, Lieutenant General Zulu, Divisional Commissioner, Human Resource Development, Major General Kunewald, representing that is Legal Services, Lieutenant General Musala, Divisional Commissioner, Visible Policing and Operations, Major General Maxen, Acting Divisional Commissioner, Detective and Forensic Services, Major General M. Mamuteti, Component Head Flash, Major General L. Mangale, Division Detective and Forensic Services, Major General Peters, Component Head, Corporate Communication and Liaison, Major General Ravi, Component Head, Strategic Management, Brigadier L. Ras, Acting Head, Forensic Science Laboratory, Brigadier L. S. Malahlela, Section Head, Executive Secretariat, Office of the National Commissioner, Colonel J. Lidwaba, Record of Decision Management, Office of the National Commissioner. Chair, I think our presentations, the first one on firearms is going to be led by Lieutenant General Masemula, who will then be following, will be followed later by Lieutenant General Vuma. With your permission, I can hand over to Lieutenant General Masemula to introduce the presenters from his side. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, General Sotole. You may continue.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Committee.
My apologies, Lieutenant General Masemula. If your gadget is not named, you will not be let into the meeting. So there's a number of people who are still in the waiting room. They are not being let into the meeting because they haven't renamed their gadgets. You may continue, Lieutenant General Masemula.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Once more, let me recognize yourself, the members of the committee, the Minister of Police, General Kele, the Deputy Minister of Police, Mr. Matale, the National Commissioner, General Sotole, and General Vuma and all colleagues. Honorable Chairperson and members, the presentation that we are giving today, we are giving progress as to where we were from May month in terms of both the firearm amnesty capture as well as all other processes that follows, meaning the number of firearms that we test fires, the number of firearms that we process, the number of firearm applications relating to amnesty firearms that we have since processed, including your general renewals that are the functions of day to day. Honorable Chairperson, there is over 10,000 firearm applications that we finalized since April to now, we do acknowledge that we are not yet there where we want to be, but we surely, over 10,000, we have at least progressed, taking into account the current conditions where we do not have a full complement of members that are at work as a result of the pandemic. We are pushing overtime and try and cover the shortages, but we indeed made that progress. General Mamuteti will then take us through the presentation on the campus. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee. Good morning. Good morning once more to the Minister of Police and Deputy Minister of Police, the National Commissioner, the Deputy National Commissioners and Divisional Commissioners, and all the generals that are in this meeting, and all the colleagues. I'll be doing the presentation as General Masemola has already alluded to. The presentation will include the introduction, the progress that we have made in relation to the firearm amnesty, as well as the applications thereof, the progress on Central Firearm Register Action Plan that was presented to the Portfolio Committee previously, and the report on the stolen firearms at the police station. The next slide will be on the introduction that we'll be talking to where we're coming from. The first thing that I need to indicate is the visit that was done by the Deputy Minister of Police with the Deputy National Commissioner of Police, as well as the Divisional Commissioner, on the 1st of March 2021, where they did the walkabout to check what is it that is happening and came with an intervention. And this was also followed by the visit of the Portfolio Committee on the 15th of May 2021, where there were also some developments or some interventions that were also put in place. From that visit, the two visits, there was an action plan that was subsequently developed to address those challenges that were impacting on the finalization of the firearm licenses related applications, and including those that talks to the amnesties. An additional allocation of 30 million was given to as a baseline for finalization of firearm applications, which was based on the plan that was developed. And 62 million was allocated for the development of the e-submission, and as well as the acquisition of digital system that is going to be assisting us with the record system. However, I must indicate that the implementation thereof of this CFR action plan, the success will depend or is also influenced by the dependencies that are already are there, as well as the issues around the COVID. As much as we are acknowledging that we are living with this situation, but there are other issues that we will highlight when we do the presentation so that we can indicate how far are we in terms of the challenges that we are facing. But however, I must indicate that as we move, there are interventions that we have put in place to improve on the performance as we move. The presentation thereof will cover the progress that we have made since 2021. Going to the progress, starting with the firearms that were surrendered, as well as the ammunition for the two amnesties for 2019-20, as well as 2020-2021. The total figure there is 165,715, of which 116,652 was 2020-21, and then 49,063 is for 2019-2020. The reason why we have this figure is because we have also included those firearms that have not yet been captured at the station, with a total number of 2,381, and those that were captured during the process from the period of May about to date, which is the total of 1,720. The delay in terms of capturing of those firearms is mainly due to preferences. The preferences is on the information, the incorrect information that has actually been captured on the system, which still has to be rectified before we can capture the firearm on the relevant code. However, I must indicate that there are intervention in regard to the preferences. The function has been decentralized to the provinces. They have up until this Friday to finalize everything. So in total, in terms of the firearms, is 165,751. The firearms that include those that have not yet been captured, and the ammunition has not changed. We are still sitting at 404-524 for 2021 and 319-435 for 2019-2020. If you move now to the firing testing and the specimen, this is the condition that was set by the minister when we were gazetting, when he was gazetting the firearm amnesty, that the firearms must be tested and be subjected to ballistic testing. Out of 165,715 that has been surrendered, the test firing that has been conducted in the provinces is 131,991, of which In May we were sitting at 131,991, and currently we are sitting on 148,419, which is an increase in terms of the test firing. The FSL for analysis, these are the figures that relate to the capturing of the specimen on the system. In May, it was 110,008. There is an increase of more than 10,000. Currently, we are sitting with 123,199. Of total 123,999,199 test statements which were received at national, 54,507 were finalized, and currently 68,692 are still in progress. The issue around the finalization of the FSL analysis, there is an intervention with the newly appointed divisional commissioner. We have already engaged, and the process will be unfolded in terms of finalizing and expediting the process from that environment. If we go to the firearms that have been destructed, out of the firearms that were surrendered, already there were firearms that have been destructed for the period of January. There was a destruction that was conducted in January, and there was the other one that was also conducted recently in July. The total number of firearms that were destructed is 20,439, and the amnesty firearms for 1920 is 14,698, and the amnesty firearms for 2020-21 is 5,741. I must indicate that these firearms that were destructed were subjected to ID testing and were not linked to the applications and crime, as it was indicated in terms of the condition that was set by the Minister for the Amnesty. The licensing of the applications for surrendered firearms, the firearms that have been surrendered, we also followed the same approach so that we can be consistent in terms of the applications that we have received. General, if you can help me on that one. The total number of applications that we have received for the surrendered firearms is 105,121, which is 105,121. The total is made of 2021 amnesty, which is 75,363. And amnesty 1920, which is 29,758, of which is including the outstanding applications that have not yet been captured on the system, which is also linked to the firearms that have issues around the preferences and other issues of porphyrin. The total number of those that have not yet been captured is 3,419. And those that were captured from the period of May to date is 1,968. The previous period of May, those that were captured was 99,734. Out of those applications that have been the applications relating to firearm amnesty, a total of 14,899 applications were finalized to date. If we move to the next slide, it's on the status of firearm applications that we have administered. For the period, March is 141,461. There was a total of 89,000 new applications that were received. This will include the applications for the applications that we'll talk to. Can you go to slide number 10? Okay. The total number of applications that were received in various categories, which will include the competencies, the firearm licenses, as well as the renewal, is 158,714 applications that were received for the period of from April up until July. And the total number of those that were finalized is 91,784. What is outstanding currently is 342,134. Of 138,908 applications that are still in process, 86,801 amnesty-related applications, which can only be finalized once all the issues, like the conditions that were set by the minister, have finalized in relation to the IB testing, which I have already indicated that we are moving in terms of the intervention from the newly appointed divisional commission. Going now to the age analysis of what has been finalized. We are prioritizing the application. And if we check on the presentation, already 61,824 that were finalized were older than 120 days. So this means that these are old applications. And the 29,960 applications are new applications that were still within 120 days that were finalized. So in total, 91,784 applications were finalized for that period. In terms of various categories, competencies is 42,199 that was finalized. Firearm licenses is 47,318 and renewals is 2,272. And when we go to the age analysis in terms of the applications that are currently on hand for processing, we have those that are still within is 223,124, which are still within the 120 days. Those that are more than 120 days but less than 240 is 82,634, and those that are more is 36,372. A total number of applications on hand is 342,134. Those that relate to the renewal of applications are renewals that are finalized in the provinces. You see, the most of the applications that are sitting that are more than 2 years are actually 176,317, which still has to be finalized. And those that are more than 2 years is 4,028, of which we are prioritizing. In terms of the reasons for deviation, as I've already indicated, that there are other dependencies, but however, there are also other interventions that we have put in place. Just to indicate that we, due to COVID, the absenteeism rate also has also affected us. Those are the number of days that we have lost due to then members who were either isolated or who have also tested positive, or when the buildings were closed because of the positive case. So we have lost 7,396 days. And then we have also lost 878 days due to members who were on leave. And the total number of days that was lost is 8,274. However, I must indicate that we continue implementing the disaster management, the regulations, and the national instructions that are actually in place in terms of the COVID and also monitoring the absenteeism. We are hopeful with the vaccination that is actually unfolding that the situation will improve and we'll be able to operate with full capacity where the process of improving the finalization of applications will actually be realized. There is an issue of Polfin EFRS integration, which was actually implemented with a recommendation of the audit to be able to link the applications with the firearms. There is a problem currently that we are experiencing where the applications, when they reach our offices, they are not linked to the applications, which actually caused a delay in terms of rectifying the payment on the Polfin system, because we cannot be able to do it from this side. We can only be able to do it. It can only be rectified from the provincial level or the station level. What we have done, we have identified the hotspot provinces, which is Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, as well as Western Cape. And we're continuously monitoring the performances in relation to what we have sent back for them to rectify. And also the team has been established to focus mainly in Gauteng, because Gauteng is actually a driving distance from the CFR. The members are going direct to the stations and sit with those people to rectify the polling issues. And when they come back, they finalize the application. What the other interventions that we have requested, what we have done, is to request the TMS to enhance the system that it can be able to block the system, the application from being processed up until this level, if there is any problem with the linkage, so that the station can be able to identify the problem before they can actually submit or process the application to this level. The ballistic report, as I've indicated, is the key to finalizing the applications, especially for amnesty related. We still have the applications that we have, which are still awaiting the ballistic report. The reports that we are getting, as we have allocated, we have been allocated the CFR personnel with the access to be able to generate the reports from the system, and also to getting the monthly summary from the ballistic system, so that we can be able to finalize those reports. But however, I must indicate that the report that we're getting is also including those firearms that are not linked to the applications. So from the list that we get, normally you find the application, the reports, 25% of the reports are those that are linked to the applications, but the rest are those that were surrendered voluntarily for the purpose of destruction. It is helping us to be able to reduce the number of firearms at the storage. But however, we are pushing with the divisional commissioner, the newly appointed divisional commissioner, to be able to finalize the applications as indicated. The APIS report is the one that is assisting us to finalize the competency application, which now has to go also to CRC. With this process, we realized that if we can do it from in-house, it can actually be able to improve the progress. What we have done now, we have consulted intensively with legal services and the other role players in terms of utilizing the profiling. So there was an approval that was granted on the 20th of July 2020 for utilization of profiling. Therefore, it will mean that there will be no fingerprints that will be sent to CRC. We will be able to generate the profiling reports, which will be able to finalize the competency certificate. This is just an interim measure that we're going to be utilizing to see how far we can go in terms of the backlog for the competencies, but also to check if this process is going to be working for us forever, then we can be able to sustain it and we utilize it going forward. So the next section will be on the progress that we have made, for progress in relation to the action plan that was developed, the categories of the capturing. The first pillar, the action plan consists of the four pillars. The first pillar is the enhancement of capacity and capability, with the goal to improve capacity to process and manage the life cycle of firearm applications. The key action there, the first one, was actually to establish the teams that will work on the firearm amnesty related applications to finalize all the capturing that will include the firearms, the firing test, as well as the firearm licenses, the firearm license applications. So during that period, we moved from 20,261. Now we are left with 2,381. The applications, we were sitting with 6,910. We are currently sitting with 3,490. The firing test, we're sitting with 39,705. We are currently sitting with 17,200. As I've indicated, mostly it was due to preferences, of which we have decentralized the function to the provinces for the purpose of purification. The increase in the existing capacity to deal with the increasing backlog by identifying members who have knowledge and understanding in the process. This was the instruction that was given to all the provinces, and I can indicate that the following provinces, they have identified their hotspot stations, and they have made sure that all the members that have been trained in the environment are deployed accordingly in terms of the challenges of the stations. So KwaZulu-Natal, Mpumalanga, Gauteng, Northwest, Northern Cape, Limpopo, and Western Cape, they have they have identified members. However, Free State and Eastern Cape could not be able to identify. They have identified, but they realized that their workload in various stations was just too much to be able to for them to move those members. But they are working on an intervention in that regard. The workshops that have been conducted in relation to, the next one is the centralization of the functions at a provincial level. This will assist in making sure that the provinces are actually in par in terms of what is happening within the environment. All the provinces has actually centralized the function to the provincial level for the purpose of monitoring the activity thereof. The teams, the establishment of the teams, the national team has been moving in the provinces to check and assist the provinces up until May. The provinces also are having their teams to also monitor the progress thereof. And the team will be moving again to the provinces to assist with those other applications that are still outstanding. The implementation of overtime, I must indicate that from that period, there is a total amount of 1.9 million that was spent from CFR as well as the provincial offices for the purpose of finalizing the firearm applications related activities. Investigate the root causes of inconsistency of EFRS. There is a continuous monitoring of the system from the TMS side to check on the network infrastructure and as well as implementing those technical issues that can actually be able to provide us. There were some occasions where the system was slow and offline, but it was attended to from the various offices in terms of assisting us either from CETA or from TMS. The workshops that had to be conducted in the provinces for DFOs and Cassia services for poultry integration, there has been some workshop that has been done. We're still left with Mpumalanga and Western Cape, which was postponed due to COVID. And by next week, the provinces will be visited for finalization. The other provinces have been trained. However, there must indicate that there are other interventions that were put in place by the provinces, like KwaZulu-Natal. They also continued with their workshops. And Limpopo also has done the same. And Western Cape, they have dedicated members who are doing that. And the provincial of Gauteng, they have a provincial team that has been trained to be able to assist in that regard. This is over and above the workshops that have been conducted. The ballistic functioning of the functions of CFR to the ballistic functions to CFR personnel for access to be able to retrieve the IBIS reports. This was done as I've indicated. The members are able to access the system and generate the reports, and we are also receiving the monthly reports from the forensic services that is actually assisting us to be able to finalize those applications. Expedite the process of IBIS and AFIS system. I must indicate that 54,376 amnesty requests, which is the one that has been analyzed and finalized for that period. It also includes not only the applications, but all the firearms that have been surrendered that were IBIS tested. And then a total of 21,000 AFIS reports, which are still outstanding. But however, due to the process that we are currently embarking on of utilizing the profiling system, this will also be receiving the attention as indicated. If we go to pillar number two, the enhance of governance, efficient and effective process institutionalized within the CFR environment at all levels. We spoke about the basic conditions of services. That was basically to make sure that we have enough personnel to be able to assist us and also to mitigate on some of the other challenges that we're facing. We have engaged with a relevant office, and a presentation or a business case has been prepared that will be presented to SSDC for the bargaining council for the purpose of approval, so that we can start with the implementation of the shift system. Conducting the analysis to sustain capacity within the firearm environment in relation to age, retention, and career pathing. The retention policy has been approved, and the policy will be consulted further for the purpose of implementation of which this environment will also be part of the decisions that will be implementing. The age analysis was conducted for CFR. It's still going to be conducted for the provinces. So far, for the coming 3 years, only 4 members will be retiring from the environment if we don't have those that will resign before that time. And the time and staffing process will be initiated in such cases. The capacity or capacitate the CFO environment with adequate staff to meet the demands by conducting the work study investigation of for CFR, implement recommendation of work study investigation. The work study investigation has been finalized and approved. There is a project charter that has been developed. And once the project charter has been finalized for approval, then the OD environment will be able to embark on the other processes that will include making sure that they finalize the fixed establishment of the environment and cover the areas from the stations up until the provincial level. So far, the Gauteng provinces have also identified the vacancies and critical posts for flesh that will be prioritized for the purpose of filling. For this period, we managed to get additional 8 posts, which were the promotional posts. I must indicate that from the promotional posts, 5 of them were from the CFR and 3 were from outside. By implication, we have at least gained 3 members. That is additional for the establishment. The conduct business process mapping to determine the service standards and time frame to finalize application for firearm licenses. This works with a time study that has to be conducted from the OD environment. As indicated, the project charter has already been finalized and they will start with the process of doing the time studies from the station level up until national level so that we can work on the number of days that will take for an application to be finalized so that we are consistent with what we are saying. The enhanced CFOs skills through training. The target is to train 800 officials this financial year from HRD. The manual was finalized, was reviewed and finalized. There has been a trainer's course that was completed during April, May. And so far, there is a total of 137 DFOs from all various provinces that have been trained, 57 in April, May 40, and June 40. The anti-corruption task team, which is talking to the effective implementation of ethics and anti-corruption strategy. The anti-corruption team is still in place. So far, we have a total number of 131 members that have been vetted. Out of that number, there's 47 that is from CFR and 40 of CFR is still in process. And we are still implementing the rotation processes to minimize the corruption. And all the members have signed the code of conduct. So far, there wasn't any corruption activity that was detected or members that were charged in relation to that. There were no ethics and advocacy programs that were conducted due to COVID restrictions. The storage facility, as the portfolio committee will remember when we visited the office, it was an issue about the storage, the supply chain management with the DPW. They are working on an alternative accommodation as a short-term measure for the office. And there is an active project that is working on the renovation of Telecom Tower. By implication, what they have indicated that the completion of that building will take time. Because they were saying it will take, the completion will be finalized maybe 2022, March 31st, of which, as we know, is supposed to be moving out of that building by the end of October, if I'm not mistaken. But however, it seems like this will not be realized, but there is an alternative accommodation for the filing system that is being arranged by supply chain management in the meantime, while we are awaiting the DPWI to finalize the process of renovating the telecom tower. Maintain the visitors in accordance with the ISO standard and OHSA a city is actually the occupational health and all other building issues. They are representative from all the, from each floor. The fumigation is still continuing, and like I've indicated, that he, the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure has been engaged to engage the property owner to actually work on the defects on the building so that we can be able to improve the condition thereof while we are awaiting the process to be finalized in relation to the building of Telecom Tower. Digital migration of the filing, everything has been done. The tasking was, the CETA was tasked by the end of March to, for the review of specification, which was already submitted. And the consolidation was also done for the specification and alignment thereof. I think the finalization will be early next year in terms of us getting the contracts for the appointment of the person who will be able to assist us with the digital migration of the filing system, which is also a problem for us. If we go now to the last one is the modernization, which talks to the procurement of the new firearm control system, which is an e-solution system that will allow the electronic submission and processing of applications, that will be conducting a pilot on the e-submission as well as the deployment of the e-submission at all levels. So far, the process of the bid and the tender process to award the contract, there has been some recommendations. The bid evaluation activity has been completed, and there is a technical evaluation that has been done. The due diligence, which will be including the signing off as well as the pricing and everything in relation to BBBE, is currently in the process for authorization. And once everything has been done, we are expecting that the external audit review report will be finalized between the 3rd and 18th of August, which I think it has already passed, but I think it has been already finalized. And the review finalization and signing of the submission report is scheduled between the 16th and the 28th of which has passed. And I think TMS will be able to give the updated vision in relation to where are we in terms of those activities. The next part is issues around the report on the stolen firearms. As we know, there are issues around the firearms that are stolen in the at the station. The issues around the no wood that was also in the newspapers, where the firearms were found in the hands of the criminals. I must indicate that there are measures that are currently in place. The security issues around the development of the building themselves. If you can move to the next slide, General. Building and security standards developed and circulated for compliance, and 13 SAP 13 validation and clearance of all firearms that are actually supposed to be implemented, and the fast tracking of IBIS testing, firing and processing of forensic on all categories of firearms that will assist us to be able to move the firearms out of the storage. Those that applications have been approved, they will be handed over to the lawful owners, and those that are still outstanding, then we have to finalize their applications and make sure that they get their applications, I mean their firearms back. The clearance of firearms storage, SAP 13 storage facilities, there is a committee from national up until provincial level, which is actually working on clearing the storage as indicated. And this will assist us to be able to start with the process of the destruction of firearms, which is planned for early next year. There is a national task team that is also doing an audit in terms of the amnesty firearms, and we have also made a recommendation on the, based on that. There's National Instruction Number 8 of 2019, which is talking to the property and exhibit management that was developed and also circulated for that purpose. We emphasize on first and second level compliance inspection by SAP, stating stating commanders, as well as minimizing the access control in terms of people that are entering the SAP staging storage. The next slide. These are the measures that are in place, the National Crime Combating Forum instructions, which relate to the implementation of measures to enhance police safety and prevention of attacks targeting police stations in terms of police safety strategy and plan, and also a directive that is also ensuring that the police safety and mitigate the risk of possible attacks on police stations. That was also circulated to all the provinces and stations, and the national instructions also that talks to the movable government property that includes specific requirements for the management of such firearms circulated is also in place. Next, General, the last. The other issue is that SAPS is currently making use of 9 central firearm storage facilities that we putting all the firearms for the purpose of destruction. And all the commanders are also instructed to conduct physical firearm and ammunition inspections. And the on-duty and off-duty issues are supposed to receive the necessary attention. All commanders are also instructed to ensure a proper control over the issuing of firearms by utilizing the approved SAP 457 firearm register, as well as the SAP 50, which is a duty list. I think this is in short in terms of the presentation. Maybe just as a conclusion that there is a, from what we have presented, there is a progress in terms, if we compare May to what we have currently, although we are still working in terms of assisting or in terms of identifying the interventions that can actually improve the number of applications that are processed, as well as the finalization of the firearm amnesty. And we are optimistic in terms of the interventions that we have put, especially the intervention from IB testing, as I've indicated that the Division Commissioner is on board, as well as the polling issue and the profiling. I think when we start implementing that, there will be sort of an improvement in that regard. So we are optimistic in that regard. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. General Mamuteti, could you show me your face, please?
And can I show my face?
Yes, please.
How do I do that? Technology is okay.
Start your video, please.
This is me.
Now, you know, I find it mind-boggling that you are doing this presentation here today. The most complaints I receive is about you. In one single day, I can get 50 complaints about you. I just wanted to see who you are filling up my email box with people having complaints about you. So you can switch off your video. I wanted to see you personally because I cannot bear the number of emails about complaints about you, please. I'll see you personally. I'll make an appointment to see you. And I'll forward all those emails. Can you make sure that you have, that I have your email address? I'll forward all those complaints to you. Honorable Minister, National Commissioner, this portfolio committee visited the Central Firearm Registry in May. In March, we raised the matter of the firearms, the firearm amnesty in this portfolio committee. The organizational plan is signed off in June when we raised it in March. Honorable Minister, everything in this department takes 3 months to complete. It takes you 3 months to send us responses to the questions which members ask in writing. It takes exactly 3 months. I'll send you dates of how long it takes you to respond to questions. You've only employed three new employees. 5 were promotion posts. So how are we going to address this backlog if you have only 3 new employees? Could you, there is an, you have an organizational plan, but you only employ 3 new people. It's totally, totally unheard of. I thought that today you're going to tell us that there is action, that there's movement. You say there's movement, but the presentation you made, that doesn't give me hope at all. Unless the rest of the members in the committee had hope. But I promise you, I've had no hope. You were supposed to respond to me on the court orders that you have not implemented. There were court orders, several court orders, and they have not been implemented. And so I can go on. Honorable Minister, you have released the crime stats. Now, crime stats will become one of the performance indicators which we will have as a committee. And that means that you will have to come to the committee to report on those crime stats. Murder went up by 66.2%. Sexual offences went up by 74%. Attempted murder went up by 47%. Assault 70%, common assault 51%, common robbery 65%, aggravating robbery 56%, total contact crime went up by 60%. So if the committee has to engage with crime stats via the media, when will we have answers to the problems we see here? In terms of murder, the per capita ratio, the murder per 100,000 of the population, is the highest it has been in the first quarter in 5 years. In 2017-18, it was 8.6%. 2018-19, 8.1%. 1920, 9.3%. 2020-2021, 5.8% for first quarter. And this first quarter, the murder rate per capita, the murder per capita ratio is 9.5% higher. So I'm wondering if we have been turned to television spectators when it comes to crime statistics. We are viewers. Your invitation, you invite everybody to view you. There isn't a single invitation that comes to the portfolio committee that says the crime stats will be released and we are invited to view. So this, the crime statistics, I'm now, please, if I'm going to write, as I wrote to the speaker last week, I'm going to write to the speaker that we cannot engage the crime statistics via the media. If the crime statistics are so shocking, Central Firearm Registry that is supposed to be improved. We visited, there's been an oversight visit to the Central Firearm Registry, and I still do not get a clear picture on how, if you only employ 3 additional people, then I really do not know how we're going to address the backlog. Honorable members, I'll take hands. Honorable Whitfield, no, it was first Ter Blanche, Whitfield, Groenewald, Meshwe, and then Shembeni.
Chairperson.
Yes, Honorable Mapatsu.
You know, I had electrical problems here.
Yes,
so I want to reset how to raise my hand. It's giving me a problem. Can you note me, Chair?
I'll note you, Honorable Mapatsu. Ter Blanche, Whitfield, Groenewald, Meshu, Shembeni, and Mapatse.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, here you are. Thank you, Chairperson. You really said a mouthful. You said you made a very good summary of the predicament that we are facing. You know, I was expecting a very specific information on the building. In the first instance, Chairperson, apparently the people don't understand that building as it is life-threatening. The fact that people are still accommodated in that building is a crime in itself. And really, you know, I don't know, apparently nobody understands that. Secondly, Chairperson, coming to, you know, the new system that needs to be developed, and, you know, the migration onto an electronic system. Chairperson, if you look at the dates, and I'm reading for you, you know, it will only be finalized in November 2024. Chairperson, this committee are not going to see this date. Well, some of us at least not. We will not see the date. I am really concerned, you know, and I'm sorry, I don't want to be rude or whatever, but, you know, I'm sensing like a laissez-faire approach. People are not serious. People don't intend to really grab the bulls by the horns. You refer to the appointment of people. Chairperson, it was only a promotion exercise. It was a promotion exercise. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Sir Blanche, didn't they say that five were promoted and three were new employees?
Chairperson, yes, it was promotion Yes, but five was promoted in-house and three. Yes, but three also got promoted, but from somewhere else. So this isn't a promotion exercise. They didn't appoint entry-level people that can actually do the job. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Branch. Honorable Whitfield.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, thank you very much for your comments. I think it's very clear that the Central Firearms Registry is being put on terms by this committee, and for very good reason. If you convert the firearm license applications completed into percentages as a percentage of the total applications in process, and Chairperson, it was a very quick calculation this morning, and so it could be much worse. The overall total across competency firearm licenses and business renewals is an average of 27% of the total applications in process. I fear that it's actually less than that and that my calculation might not be 100% accurate, but I can guarantee you that I will go back and do the numbers when I have some more time. And for surrendered firearms over the 2 years, it's 18%. And so it's no surprise that you are receiving all of these very frustrated emails, because it almost seems impossible that such dysfunction is unintentional to create such chaos in the Central Firearms Registry that there has been no demonstrable improvement since the Police Portfolio Committee went to the Central Firearms Registry is simply shocking. I want to know, Chairperson, how many amnesty firearms have been stolen and what progress has actually been made with regards to bringing the entire firearm application system fully online, as was discussed during the oversight and which was supported by the National Police Commissioner. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Whitfield. Honorable Groenewald.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, on slide number 9, we received the figures of the license applications for surrendered firearms. Now, my question is, if we look at that slide, we see that, for instance, for 2020-2021, there were 75,363 applications, and only 4,241 were finalized to date. So of the 75,000, only 4,000 has been finalized. I would like to know why, and I don't want to hear about COVID and all these other factors mentioned. The figure is really a big concern, and that's only for license applications after the firearms were surrendered. There are many people, specifically the farmers, who had to hand in their firearm. They had reapplied for a license, and now they don't have any firearms to protect themselves. The second issue, Chairperson, is I want to refer to the Polfin on your slide 13 of the presentation, the Polfin EFRS integration system. It said payment not linked to the applications, the delay in rectifying payment on the Polfin system. So yes, we know that. And Chairperson, what is disturbing is that already in 2010, when the ministerial task team reported on a visit to the Central Firearms Registry, I say 2010, it was already identified that the Polfin system is a problem. We are in August 2021. And if we even also look at slide number 17, it says that they are only conducting workshops in the provinces for the DFOs and the cashier services for Polfin and EFRS linkages. Now, Chairperson, I think it is, it is totally unacceptable that after all these years that they are conducting workshops now. I mean, the DFOs and the cashiers are supposed that if they are assigned to that specific position, that they know the job. And I want to know, why do we only have to see that workshops are conducted now? It's a system that has a severe impact on the licensing, the competence certificates and everything, and it has been identified already in 2010. My last issue, Chairperson, is if we look at the measures to secure firearms. On slide 23, if we look there, it says the following. The following measures were implemented to address security of firearms in SAPS exhibit stores, SAPS 13 stores as we refer. Now, Chairperson, if I look at these measures, I must really be honest with you to say there's nothing new. It's supposed to be like that always. For instance, if I like take the last one, access control to SAPS 13 stores limited to authorized members. Now, what do we say? Were unauthorized members permitted entry into the SAPS 13 stores? Because if we now say that one of the measures we are taking is to ensure that there's access control, that means that we didn't have proper access control. So how is it possible? It's nothing new. It's only putting it in a different order on a presentation to the committee. It's totally unacceptable, Chairperson, and I can't see that we can continue this way. On slide 24, on the same measures, it refers to the National Instruction 6 of 2018 on movable government property that includes specific requirements for the management of SAPS firearms circulated. It says measures implemented to address the security of firearms. It's a national instruction from 2018. Chairperson, we are in 2021. This, for me, is proof that there is no proper command, there's no proper control, and therefore, Chairperson, that is why we have a situation of illegal firearms. My last question will be on the Eastern Cape. The Eastern Cape is a serious problem. Just to give you an indication, Chairperson, I've asked a question already in 2019, the 28th of June 2019, on lost firearms and ammunition rounds at police stations. It was for the last 5 or 6 years at that stage. In the Eastern Cape alone, there were 3,231,406 rounds of ammunition lost 2016-27 financial year. If we look at some other provinces, but I want to emphasize the Eastern Cape, but when I see that the destruction of surrendered firearms, there are zero in the Eastern Cape. I also see in the Northwest and other provinces, but I specifically want to know, in the Eastern Cape, with the history, if you add all those for the last, from that answer from the minister, we talk about more than 5 million rounds of ammunition in the Eastern Cape lost. So that is, can I say, a pandemic in the Eastern Cape. How many firearms had been handed in the amnesty period in the Eastern Cape, and why were none of those that qualified being destructed in that province? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Groenewald, Honorable Meshu, and then Shembeni.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I want to concur with the remarks you made in your opening address. They were spot on. We are very concerned by what's happening in the Firearms Registry Department. My first question is that they said on the 1st of May, on the 1st of March this year, the Deputy Minister of Police with the Deputy National Commissioner visited that building that we saw that is not fit for occupation. Now, I want to know what shortcomings when they visited that building were identified, and what interventions have been made so far. It is surprising and it is shocking to note that until today, staff is expected to be productive in a building that should have been condemned long ago. And in the questions we raised, among them was, we need to be provided with the name and contact details of the person who owns that building. And we are not hearing anything about that. Some answers have been sent, but about who owns the building, nothing's been said. Now, when we're there, obviously, we suspect that there must be an arrangement between the owner of the building and whoever is approving the lease. So may we request that we be given that information as soon as it is practically possible. I also had a question about this substation stores. It is a concern to hear about access control going to be made. Stricter access control going to be made. So what I want to know now is whether any policeman is allowed to walk in there, or what is being done, or what has been the practice. Because now we are promised that access control is going to be improved. What has been done? What has been the norm? Is it surprising that so many firearms are lost? And more than 50% are not recovered. I think there is something seriously wrong in SAPS management. And we must try and come to the root of the problem. If we want things about what happened, during the looting of and destruction of property of July this year. It's like nobody knew what to do, particularly the first 3 days when there was nobody, no policeman who was visible on the ground in KZN. Now, the question is there management that gives direction? Are the commanders commanding, or what is the problem? And lastly, when it comes to the destruction of firearms that have been handed in, and you hear about thousands that are still not destroyed, you ask yourself a question. Are those the firearms that are planned to be released to criminals, as we know and we have heard, that there were individuals or there are still individuals maybe that have not yet been caught who rent out firearms? Crime in South Africa will not come down until the police management bring order among their own people. So we are disappointed that a number of answers we expected this morning were not forthcoming. So I think, Chairperson, we agree with you that when crime stats are released, it is not fair for members of parliament to get information after the media got it, to get the information on television screens and not being given the privilege of being informed, so that when we have questions, we ask questions, because after the stats are released, people ask us questions and we are unable to answer questions. Why? Because we are also not taken into the confidence of the police. It's either they are deliberately hiding things from us for reasons they know, or I'm not sure what's happening. Because members of this committee, who should be responsible for oversight, looking at what the department is doing, should have the privilege of knowing even what the journalists don't know. But the journalists seem to have more information than us. Thank you, Chairperson, and which is very disappointing. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Meshu, Honorable Shembeni, and then Mapatsu.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister, Commissioner, and your delegation. Yeah, firstly, I would like to comment about the issue of the crime stats. This is not the first time that we speak about the issue of getting the crime stats before they get to the media. And seemingly we don't get the cooperation of the minister. That is undermining us. Remember, the minister said he is the one that preferred that he takes the stats to the cabinet and from there to the media, meaning that we are nothing to him. He does not report to us. So he is undermining us. I think that must change. Now, firstly, my question is, of this destructed firearms that were handed in different provinces, we've got Eastern Cape, we've got KZN, there is Northwest, Northern Cape, and the Western Cape, where there are no firearms that have been destroyed. What is happening there? But there are firearms that have been handed in for amnesty. Why are they not destroyed? Or when are they going to be destroyed? What is going to happen when they are stolen? Another issue, on the issue of the amnesty again, of the firearms handed in, how many of those firearms are foreign made? How many of those firearms handed in have been reported stolen and are handed back to owners? Some of them, I know that there are cases that are being opened of negligence and what of firearms before a firearm is being stolen. Do we have such cases that are being investigated or what? Now, how long does it take? This is a question that is always being asked for a firearm license to be
issued, applications to be finalized. If you talk about over 2 years, because now here people are sitting with firearms. Yes, they are being covered by the regulation that if they've made the applications, yes, there are firearms that are still, or their licenses are still valid. But to me, it does not make sense that you can apply for a firearm license and wait for 2 years for approval. And in these 2 years, other applications are still getting in the CFR. So I think something needs to be done. As my fellow honorable members have mentioned that there was no enlistment, new enlistment in the CFR. It's just we've seen the promotion of the five members and sometimes of the new members that may be coming from other sections around the SAPS. Now, of the recovered firearms, how many have been already used in the commission of crime of those recovered firearms, of serious crimes like murders, armed robberies, hijackings, heists, and so on. Of these firearms that have been handed in, do we have that firearms that have committed such serious offenses within them? I thank you, Chair.
And will engage thoroughly on the stats and will make our own findings as a portfolio committee, because the minister does not have confidence in the portfolio committee. Crime stats are very serious. Remember, we have got constituency offices we are asked about these things of crimes. But if we don't have a crime stats, but if we don't have information as the members of we said that building is not good for human beings to work there. And we're told that it has got cracks, that building. And when we ask, why are you staying in something that can kill policemen and women, and you keep on going there? And we were told that no, it is not them who procure, it is the Department of Public Works. But they did inform the Public Works that this building is not good for humans to live there. And we then make the recommendations that let us know who is the owner of that Veritas. I think it's Veritas. And we must ask why time and again when the contract expires, that person from Public Works renews the contract. When you have complained that, hey, it's not safe, we have seen it ourselves there, it's not good. So we said if there is corruption, it must be investigated that our people cannot Honorable Shembeni has made comments about them. The last one is the one that I was saying that in our recommendations that we we made is that of the one of the Veritas building. To this time, Chair, we have not received any report of what has transpired over our recommendations that we have made, Chair. But Chair, it is clear that our people are not going to get licenses. And if the systems are taking time, when everything is on the table, working together with CETA, the SAP, I don't understand why it is taking time to procure, to make sure that things are processed very fast. So I agree that there is something wrong in the management there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mapatse, Honorable Moss, and then Honorable Faku.
Because on the moment they was using the manual system and that system is not working. In the oversight of the 15th of May, we said about, we thought, discussed, have a long discussion there on that one of the floors where we made the recommendation. In that oversight meeting, we promised by SAPS that they're going to look in the proposal of the committee and they're going to work on it. They briefed us and saying that GCIS is also who will assisting them. So I want to ask the question, when can this new system be finalized? I hear what the presentation said, but when can it be finalized and be up and running? We cannot do things for you, for take time for years, like we actually, as you said in your input, Chairperson, that take 3 months to just to respond to questions and concerns that members raise. My second point, I agree what the previous members is saying on the issue of that building, and that building is like a talk show. For me, it's like a talk show. We say it there, even though the National Commissioner said in that meeting, they are not informed him in time when they renew the lease. For me, it was a very disappointment. I mean, you pass the commissioner and you just renew the lease agreement of a building who are not human friendly, where people, men and women, must working. And even on that day, they increase every year the payment of that lease agreement, while the owner knows the building is not in a good condition for people to work in, and is still getting money, and the money should also be increased. My tax pay money, my tax go in that building, and the building is in a bad state. Not only this, the building, also the condition. The building is dirty, the carpets, the floor, the toilets, the kitchen. It's really bad condition. I don't know how the people work there. I will not even work there. It's bad, it's bad. I don't know if the department of, if that building has cleaners. The place is not even be proper clean. It's very, very bad, Chairperson. And I mean, Parliament saying we must do oversight. We did do our oversight. After 5 or 4 months, nothing is happening. It's still the same. I mean, public works is not doing, it's not doing the work, as opposed to are the custodian of all the buildings. My last point, Chairperson, was on the issue of the intervention of the, it's one of the slides was talking about the interventions. They say they established a focus team for Gauteng. While there's also other provinces we mentioned, like your KZN in Western Cape and Eastern Cape, Why is Gauteng in the special case? They must tell us on that slide in the corner. Why is Gauteng a special case? And but they mentioned about the other provinces, and they didn't establish a team for the other provinces. So tell us why you did not do it and what is the reason so that we can understand that slide. I don't understand that slide, really. Because of what you said, when we visit the 15th of May, we was there in Gauteng. The commissioner of Gauteng was doing a presentation. In that presentation, that was sound like Gauteng don't have problems. Gauteng was the best performing province. But when we look into light on the issue of the looting and so forth, the uprising of that looting issue, then Gauteng was one of the worst ones. There was not gear up. It was not even gear up for that violence in that province. So my concern is, what we get on paper, is it really the reality on the ground? For me, that seems not, it's not the real reality. I'm not one to challenge people and take and challenge people's integrity, but I have a feeling really we need a respect where respect is supposed to be. But it seems that we're not getting the respect as the portfolio committee. We didn't put us there who want to go to parliament. We must be chosen by the people of South Africa. They voted for us. And they have the trust in us. So we can allow these things happening in this department. We're playing with our people's lives. Because this department, the police, and particularly this firearms, in Cape Town, the gangsterism is very high. And you can observe how that happening in Menenberg, Heidelberg, and Nova Park, Philippi, and all those areas. Because of those things, of firearms who get lost and not maybe coming back. Really, I support Jenny on that issue of the firearms, why the Western Cape and those other provinces not be dealing with. Thank you very much, Jay.
Thank you very much, Honorable Faku.
Greetings to yourself, to honorable members, minister, deputy ministers, and everyone on the platform. Chair, first, let me say, let us welcome the report that we've received from SAPS. I think I fully agree with your opening remarks that somehow as a committee, we make recommendations and the recommendations are not taken. We have pleaded with the ministry before that when it comes to crime stats, it must come to the committee first before it is taken into the media. But that has not changed. With the ministry to please at least take the committee into confidence. I've heard the minister's concerns when he said that at times when they come and release the sets in the committee, that information is taken to the media before they publicize. Well, we know how to behave as members, although there are sometimes leaks. And I think also we must take that responsibility as members of the parliament, because sometimes it happens that when we're given information, you see the information on the media. We've taken a stance as a committee to say that we must never politicize issues that relate to the South African police services. So I think it's a two-way thing, Chair. We must take full responsibility, the reasons why steps were not given to the committee, but equally, as a committee, we have committed ourselves that we would not share any of the steps when the minister come and present to us. So we're hoping that this will never happen again as we're moving forward, Chair. Secondly, Chair, on the issue of the firearms registry and the firearms amnesty, you know, as a committee, we had a lot of disagreement when it came to this issue. It was up and down. But it seems that SAPS is not grabbing the whole issue of really, because I don't know, hence I always raise the issue of capacity, Chair. Because if you currently look, SAPS has received 433 applications only 91 of those applications were finalized, meaning that only 21% of those applications. And for me, from where I'm sitting, it's something that you cannot explain why. And even in the presentation that we have received, there are no mitigating factors to say what are the reasons that we're stuck here. We keep on receiving reports that are not assisting us, that are taking us back every time these reports are presented. I will then make the following recommendations: that SAPS must come and report to us on a monthly basis when it comes to the firearms registry, because if we give them space, too much space, then they do the opposite. They don't come and give us the correct information, Chair. Secondly, there was an allocation of 30 million, and then there was an additional baseline that was included. So can we be explained, is the operational cost 60 million? If you have 60 million, are you saying it's enough? What are the reasons that you can't perform your task? My second recommendation, Chair, will be that the ministry, there must be a ministerial intervention to address the challenges between SAPS and the Department of Public Works. We know that SAPS did not achieve some of their targets because of the challenges they have with public works. We can't now, because if the ministries, they don't intervene, then we are going to have a serious problem. And I want to recommend that the ministry, the national commissioner, must hold officials who are supposed to do their work accountable. You have a building that has a lease that has been renewed time and again while it was declared unfit for occupation. I want to recommend to the ministry that this individual who has been renewing, that person must be taken into a disciplinary action. Why would you renew a building, but you were told that the building is unfit for occupation? We can talk here, Chair, until the day, but one thing that I want to recommend, that at least let us get feedback, proper feedback from staff. Actually, we should have stopped them when they were doing the presentation, that they must go back and give us a proper analysis of what is happening. And we must also get a clear reflection of the estimated cost associated with the implementation of digitalization of the firearms registry. And I think, again, here, the ministry needs to speak to the Minister of Communication and Digital Technologies to give us, because we are just told there's this process, but we're not told about cost, about nothing. So if I was you, Chair, I was going to turn Minister and the National Commissioner back, because this presentation is the same thing that we've been hearing. There's nothing that has changed, Chair. So I want to make those recommendations. Perhaps let us ask them to go back and give us a proper presentation when this is unacceptable, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Honourable Members, we have been lamenting today. Something needs to be done. It's shocking. It's surprising. SAPS was overwhelmed. You know, we are using very good English. We wrote a dictionary today on how distraught we are, and the level of unhappiness in this committee is growing. And members are now turning on me to take out their frustrations on me as a committee chair, when indeed we are frustrated with the presentations, we are frustrated with the progress and the lack of progress. Clause 56 of the Constitution says that evidence or information before the National Assembly. The National Assembly or any of its committees may summon any person to appear before it to give evidence on oath or affirmation or to produce documents. This is the constitutional power which this committee has. Require any person or institution to report to it. Compel in terms of national legislation or the rules and orders any person or institution to comply with the summons or requirement in terms of paragraph A or paragraph B. Honorable Minister and FEPS, we have spoken enough now. We will give you according to 56 notice. We'll issue a 56 notice and the crime stats will be released in the committee. That is a section 56 notice will be sent to you. I'll take the next presentation now.
Chair, I will say we're not answering questions.
The honourable members have even suggested that this presentation must be sent back. I'll take the next presentation and then I'll take answers.
Chairperson, I understand that, but these questions are put there and are in public, they must be responded to.
Honourable Minister, yes. I said I'll take the next presentation and then I'll take responses.
Okay.
Honorable Chair, the next presentation is going to be led by Lieutenant General Sin Tumule. With your permission, I can give her the floor.
Are you sure, General Satole, that this is not the person that receives emails about complaints about every day?
Chair, I'm not sure what is exactly contained in all the emails, but I have already confirmed the first one you've shown, who showed her face, and I've taken serious note of that one. But we are working seriously to make sure that we reduce the load from the chair back into the organization by providing proactive action to these challenges. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. General Satole, I spoke in this committee several times about the Central Firearm Registry and the correspondence I receive from people whose, some of them have 2-year delay, which you are just relaying to us in today's meetings. The staff of, we only have 3-4 staff members. We have to take all the questions which SAP's unable to respond to. You have a huge structure, you're one of the biggest departments in this country. But now we are 4-5 of us have to respond to all these emails. And we've raised it in this committee. So if you are convinced that this person is you have confidence in this person, then you can give your presentation. So else, we're not going to even expect answers from you. You can close shop. Are these answers we're receiving now, General Satole?
As instructed and as a newly appointed divisional commissioner, I made the mandate very clear. But in case the committee doesn't get the expected product, then we'll go back to the drawing board. But I've also indicated I'm going to take relevant action in case we do not get the desired product. Thank you, Chair. But I do have confidence in the new divisional commissioner.
Thank you very much. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Greetings to you. Yes. Greetings to you and members of the committee. Greetings to the Minister of Police, General Peggy Kelle, the Deputy Minister of Police, the National Commissioner, the Deputy National Commissioner, General Buma, General Masemula, the National Head of the DPCI, General Libia, all generals present in the platform, and to all the other colleagues. Thank you, Chair. I will proceed with the presentation. Thank you, Chairperson. The purpose of today is to provide the Buffalo Committee on Policing with progress made on mega second by the subs to deal with the DNA backlog, as well as our collaboration with the public-private sector laboratories in reducing the DNA backlog. And the report will focus on the period under review, which is from the 1st of April 2021 until the 18th of August 2021, which is last Friday. Thank you. Chairperson, as the newly appointed Legal Commissioner, I want to highlight that we as the subs appreciate the gravity of the situation. And maybe to steal from the Minister's cabinet delivery on the 12th of May, when he said the huge backlog as experienced in FSL is unacceptable. So today we are here to present what we have done to check the situation. Thank you. Our approach, Chairperson, to dealing with and eliminating backlog is based on a four-dimensional or four focus areas. The first area is the DNA backlog, which was ring-fenced by CETA from the 1st of June. That talks to what the Minister declared in Cabinet on the 12th of May. Then also we're going to look at the current cases based on what has been received from the 1st of April up until the 18th, 19th of August, but also talk about the joint project with the NPA, as chaired by the Deputy Minister of Police and the Deputy Minister of Justice, where we are dealing with the cases of murder, inquest, and the GBVF. Then the last focus area is what we are working on in eliminating backlog with the public-public partnerships, as well as the public-private partnerships, including MPET. Next slide, General Rabi. Chairperson, before I proceed, I would like to also reflect on the Minister's delivery on the 12th of May, where he gave historical considerations on the backlog, where he then explained how we got to the backlog. And in that, he also made a commitment that our goal as the subs is to bring normality back to the operations of the subs FSL within the next 18 months, which means that this is the first report we are giving post that declaration by the Minister in terms of what has been done. In our calculation, the intended objective is that by the 12th of November 2021, subs should have zero backlog, DNA analysis backlog. Thank you, Chair. As I reported earlier, when the Minister made the pronouncement, the backlog was standing at 210,864. Working together with CETA as well as TMS on the FEM system, our analysis and the report is that by the 1st of June, that backlog, which was ring-fenced, was reduced to 180,191. And as of last week, Friday, on the 19th, this backlog is sitting at 166,327, which means to date, a total of 44,537 cases have been concluded where reports were generated. Thank you. As we are reporting on backlog, we also brought in the new approach to say, can we then also look at the cases registered on the FEM system from the 1st of April up until the 19th of August, not June, but August. To date, according to the system, the total registered on the system is 114,962 cases. And this is broken down in the following order, 9,204. Has recorded a total of 33,016 cases. Next slide. on what has been received from the 1st April. This is the progress made. Of the 114.962 cases, the team has been able to conclude 43,658 cases, and currently we are standing at 71,304. And that will be cases on all categories within your DNA process. So in total, we can say that from the 1st of April, a total of 88,195 cases have been concluded, and that is including the 44,537 of backlog, including the 43,658 cases concluded. And this is based on the CETA forensic admin system. So in summary, Chairperson, the total entries we have on the system as of the 19th of August was 237,994 entries or cases. And of those, 166,690 would be the remaining or outstanding backlog, and the 71,000 would be the new entries. Thank you. In terms of GBV, correction, Chairperson, that shouldn't say GBV backlog, it should actually be GBV cases. From the 1st of April until the 19th of August, the cases that we had on the system was 90,201, and these include the finalized cases as well as the current. If I can break it down to the committee, a total of 13,864 cases have been finalized, and that also includes 23,193 cases that are current or new cases on GBV, and that leaves us with a backlog of 53,144, and that is actually less than what we recorded when we gave the report in June, which said 59,000, and I think the one in July had 63,000 cases. The cases on GBV will also be dealt with in terms of our partnership report with your public partnership with the GBVF from the President. In terms of the challenges, Chairperson, we speak here about your forensic service approach to conduct management. And that talks to us moving away from your tactical procurement, where we procure without understanding the strategic importance of each procurement, to moving to a solution where we are talking about the strategic purchasing or procurement plan that talks about each item, procurement per line item. I will explain later in terms of that. And also we are talking here ensuring that at any given time, our stock availability, whether it's consumables or PPE, should always be at 90%, as well as the functionality of our maintenance or service equipment should always be at 90% effectiveness. We previously spoke about the issue of COVID challenges and their impact on your lab output. Our members have been vaccinated, and 60% of those. We are currently working together with PolMed as well as MedSkim to ensure that the remaining members who prefer the Pfizer also get vaccinated. But also beyond that, we also want to emphasize that much as it cannot be an excuse, but really the issue of COVID has also crippled our optimal capacity to deliver in terms of reducing the backlog. But we are making inroads, and I think we're looking at also the issue of the shift system, as well as your overtime over and above the current 50% rotation. Optimizing lab capacity, that now says that we really need to work aggressively on reducing the backlog, and that cannot be done only by subs, as we have realized, and I think there's been a public outcry on our public-private partnerships. So that we have already entered into, and I think we have made strides in relation to the GBVF partnership, as well as the one that are looking at your consumables. Also, we have made calls for re-enlistment of analysts, as well as the employment of forensic experts on a contact basis, because this is a highly specialized environment. In terms of progress made in relation to contracts, if we reflect on the 2020-2021 contracts, we are moving from a situation where we only have 6 contracts in place, and today we can safely say that we have currently 14 active contracts, and those are supporting the DNA analysis. And we also are working on concluding outstanding contracts in 79 that are basically responsible for your DNA processing, as well as consumables within the DNA environment. I spoke about the issue of vaccination and the shift system. Next slide. I also reflected on the issue of COVID and its impact on the performance. Next slide. Rabbit? And we did cover focus area number one on the issue of your diversified contract management. And now we are going to talk more on the issue of the GBVF as our public partner, as well as other levels that you are engaging, particularly in relation to consumables which are procured overseas, as well as MPET that is assisting us, especially in relation to the issue of inquests. Next slide. As reported earlier, this partnership was entered into as early as last year, towards the end of the year. I'm happy to respond that by today, phase one was concluded in relation to the mechanisms and legal requirements, where legal services of both entities, SAPS as well as GBVF, had to vet the partnership. Then we defined the areas of focus in relation to how it can be unfolded. And today we're sitting where both labs, which have been identified, have been visited, and I'm going to give feedback on the next slide. From the from the GBVF partnership, 2 national health laboratories have been identified: the KwaZulu-Natal Research Innovation and Sequencing Platform, otherwise known as the CRISP laboratory, as well as the Central Analytical Facility that is based at Stellenbosch University. Both systems are backed up by the continuous data protection to ensure that such information will not be compromised during the process. And to go further, the key principles of this partnership are that at all times we should ensure the chain of evidence as required by the law, but also we follow the supply chain or procurement processes in terms of donations, as well as what is outlined by Treasury regulations on issues of partnership. Next slide. The critical aspect of this is that based on the discussions we've had with the partnership, made up of experts in the DNA environment, is that by the 1st of October, this should run live. Hence this week, there are meetings set between ourselves and the GBVF. Chairperson, if maybe I can just make an apology. I'm still recovering from COVID, so at times my mouth gets so dry, even if I drink water. So you'll hear that my voice is not really stable. I hope that is understandable. Thank you, Chairperson. It is foreseen that this partnership will begin to yield results from the 1st of October, 2021. And this is how it's going to happen. The SAPS will basically utilize the laboratory infrastructure of both labs. And once we sit with the team, I think it's going to be before Friday, where we're going to discuss the amount of consumables as entry items that are required. Although the GBVF has offered to fund or source funding for this, we also have engaged General Zimbane to also see what is the cost implication and see if the subs can be able to carry the cost. Further, over and above getting us to eliminate or helping us to eliminate the backlog, the GBVF also has committed to assisting training forensic analysts in terms of now your continuous development program, where they will reach a level of specialty and they can be able to also publish a body of knowledge in your forensic journals and research. Thank you. Next slide. I think the operational principles have been covered as well. We can skip that one. And I think the two labs, both the CREST and the CAF, were visited in the following manner. On the 16th, the team went to KwaZulu-Natal. The 18th, the team went to Stellenbosch University. What we are waiting for now is the report from Quality Management of Staff, FSL, which will ensure that both labs comply with the ISO as well as your FSL quality standards. But the feedback we have, it's all positive and it seems like it's all going to be systems go. In terms of the way forward, we're proposing that in line with the COVID requirements, and we got a directive from the PSA as well to review our targets, that we look at the new operational models within the forensic environment without necessarily compromising output. But also we need to reinvent ourselves by embracing the pandemic-driven change. And this again, as we say, it is a new normal, but still it mustn't compromise our ability to deliver a service. Chairperson, I'm really compromised, and if it's possible, I would like to end at this point and thank the members and the chairperson.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry that you're still not well. Please get well soon, and we hope you recover maximally and that you'll be 100% soon. Honourable members, I'm just not even going to say anything. You may raise your hands. Honourable Whitfield and then Groenewald.
Chairperson, may I proceed?
Yes, you may. I called your name. Honourable Whitfield. Thanks. And then Groenewald and then Ter Blanche.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think it's obviously to be welcomed that the private-public partnerships are moving in the right direction. However, I'd like to raise a couple of preliminary concerns before I ask any questions. The first concern is that every time SAPS presents on the forensics division, which is not often, we get a different presentation. With different tables, different indicators, it creates confusion as opposed to consistency in reporting, which allows us to perform our oversight responsibilities effectively. So I would ask that SAPS decides on the format which they're going to present, then stick to that format in every report to the committee, which would make the job of the committee a lot easier and also make it easier to hold SAPS accountable. It's very difficult to hold SAPS accountable to different standards of presenting. Chair, it's concerning that it appears that the DNA board is not here today. Perhaps we can get clarity as to whether they are here. They appear to be missing in action insofar as playing their role in the turnaround plan, which was presented by SAPS in November 2020 to this committee, in spite of undertakings to ensure that they play their role. I fear that they are not doing the best that they can to assist the committee in making sure that SAPS and the forensics division, the laboratories in particular, are fulfilling their end of the bargain. SAPS also indicated in November 2020 that they would come to the committee with a report and update, or certainly send an update on a monthly basis to the committee. I think we've received one. I think that was in February or March this year. We have not received a monthly update in spite of the National Police Commissioner's personal commitment in that meeting and in the answers that were submitted in writing. It was indicated in writing that we would receive a monthly update. That has not transpired. And again, back to the presentation, the format does not match the format of the turnaround plan. And so we get almost deliberately confused or misled due to the nature of these presentations. Chairperson, I'm concerned that the total backlog is not accurate. The manner of presentation is not conducive to determining what the total backlog is. I would therefore like confirmation that the total backlog based on the figures in the presentation is sitting at 237,631. Just to be clear, that is the ring-fenced backlog balance, which is 166,327, plus the current new entries backlog, which is 71,304, if they can confirm that figure. And the second question would then be, how many case exhibits have been received but not registered on the database or on the system? Because that would then give us an indication of the actual real backlog as opposed to those case exhibits which have in fact been registered. And it's simply not true that the turnaround plan is working, Chairperson. You are very kind to have invited them here today based on last week's quarterly presentations where the percentage of biology DNA case exhibits finalized within 90 days is required to be 80%. In the course of 2020-21, it declined from 20.7% to 8.3%. The collapse continues, Chairperson, and I'm afraid that the fundamental basics are still not in place, and we are really not moving in the right direction insofar as the SAPS Forensics Division is concerned. In spite of what SAPS comes and tells us every single meeting, they are not giving us the hard facts and the hard truth that this nation requires about the crisis within the police service, particularly in this division. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Whitfield. Honorable Groenewald.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I want to link up with what the Honorable Whitfield has just said. As far as I'm concerned, it's true. We don't have progress. And the reason I say that, Chairperson, and besides all the new presentation format and everything, I've looked at our presentation we received on the 15th of May when we visited the forensics laboratories, and the figures there, the backlog that was given biology specific on gender-based violence, it then said that the total backlog was 68,235. And that was on slide 18 of that presentation. Now, if we look at today's presentation, at slide number 11, it says the backlog on gender-based violence and femicide is 90,201. So that is an increase of what it was. It's about an increase of 21,966 cases in backlog. And that's why I say there's no progress. We don't work in such a manner that the backlog becomes less. In fact, it increases. And it's the figures of the department itself. And at the same presentation on the 15th of May, it says its envisaged time period to work off backlog is at least 18 months at full capacity from 1 July 2021. Now my questions, Honorable Chair, what is the envisaged time period for working off the backlog? seeing that there's an increase in the backlog, and it was said that if it was fully operational. My second question is, firstly, if I look at the forensics evidence management system, is it now fully operational? Or are there certain aspects and certain modules of the system still outstanding? So I want a specific answer whether it is fully operational. Secondly, the next further question, Chair, when we visited the laboratory in Pretoria, there was quite a lot of machines that could not be operational because of the service providers and that they were not calibrated. And my question is, are these machines now calibrated? Are they fully operational? And if not, why not? And how many in all the laboratories are they fully operational or not? These are pertinent questions, Honorable Chair. There must be no mistake. Forensics at this moment is failing the women and the children of South Africa. It's no wonder that we read about cases of rape and everything that is more than 2 years in arrears. We are failing those women and children. We're talking about women's rights and women's month and the protection of our women and our children. The people who really can contribute to protect our women and children is the forensics. Because if you don't have the test results when a woman was raped or a child has been raped, then you fail people because you are not going to be successful in a court. Chairperson, this is serious. We cannot continue failing the women and children of South Africa. It's very nice to stand up in Parliament. It's very nice for the President to stand up and say we're going to put so much effort in curbing the violence against women and children. But the basics, the forensics, are failing those people, and therefore the criminal justice system are failing the women and children of South Africa. I would want to have clear answers on my questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Groenewald. Claire Taylor, could you please switch off your mic? Honorable Claire Taylor, could you please switch off your mic? Honorable De Blanche, and then Shembeni.
Chairperson, thank you. I am covered to a large extent by the Honorable Whitfield and Honorable Groenewald. I also just want to emphasize the fact that, you know, the numbers are still growing. If my calculations is correct, we are still in a growing sort of a trend, so we are not winning at the moment. Chairperson, and then, you know, the old saying, justice delayed is justice denied. Lastly, Chairperson, I also noticed that some contracts are still not allocated or awarded. And I just want to get clarity on that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable De Blanche, Honorable Shembeni, and then Meshu.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't have much. I just wanted clarity on the vaccination of members. I've seen here they were speaking about 193 members that were vaccinated, and there is 144 that is outstanding. I did not find out exactly what is the problem of these members not to be vaccinated. Because as far as I know is that the SAPS is bringing those people who vaccinated to the members into the institution so that they can be vaccinated. So what is the problem? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Meshu.
Chairperson, I just have one question. If I heard the presenter correctly, she said that by November 2021, SAPS will have no backlogs with the DNA testing. I want to know how they're going to get that right, particularly because there is no evidence currently that they are succeeding to reduce the number of backlogs. Well, my colleagues have already touched on this, but if they say by November 2021, there will be no backlogs, and in August, the numbers are increasing, how will they get that one right? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, honorable members. You would have noted that I was lost for words. Firstly, SAPS do not seem to read their previous presentations. Now, we read and do our homework before we come to these meetings. So we know exactly what you said in the previous meeting, and we know what you're saying today. If we continue in this fashion, presenters, before you present here, make sure and please ensure that you bring us correct facts. If you fail to do this in the future, we'll charge you for misleading Parliament. We are going to take action now. We cannot sit like this and thumbsuck and think that the members are not reading. We read, we internalize your documents. We expect progress, and today we are none the wiser. The backlog is growing. It is not being reduced. Could you please explain to me the public-private partnerships in more detail? The compliance with court orders. I do not get a sense that there's any compliance with court orders. We have had a number of court orders for this forensic science laboratories, and we have had a number of court orders for the Central Firearm Registry. Now, either you disregard the court, you are supposed to implement the law. You are supposed to exercise oversight over the law. So how do you provide oversight over the law if you're breaking the law? I'm going to take the first presentation. You can give responses to the first presentation. Honorable Shembeni, is that an old hand? Honorable Shembeni, is your hand up again? I assume it's an old hand.
Yeah, it's an old hand. I'm trying to lower the hand, Chair.
Thank you. I'll take responses. Could you please indicate who's going to respond? I'll take the first presentation. You have a half an hour to respond to the first presentation.
Chairperson, I'll start. Good morning, Chairperson and the honorable members. I hear saying members, they take anger on you. And then if we don't present ourselves an answer, we will answer, Chairperson. I'm glad that you did get the opportunity to answer. Chairperson, I don't know how far are we going with the building issues. We have raised it time and again that building and infrastructure does not fall within the portfolio of the South African Police Service. It's a trouble we all face, it's a trouble we all have, and the request has been made that the department responsible for that is approached, and so that the matters can be resolved. Honorable Chair, it was raised. It's not only this building where the firearms register is resident. Many others, some police stations, where you really wonder how the members are working themselves on that. The headquarters of the South African Police itself condemned some time ago, but the lease goes on. The new building that we're supposed to be in, I'm told the telco, we 3 years now, almost more than 3 years, we're supposed to be in billions, not 1 billion has been paid, but we are not going forward. So it's a problem that the police must come and bear its weight, but the sister department that deals with those matters seems to be not very much helpful on it. Unfortunately, the meeting has been requested twice now with the minister responsible, and we know that the minister twice has been attacked by the virus. So I would not blame her of not having not met on the matter. But this is one serious matter that police themselves suffer on it, the question of building. And the renewal, Chairperson, I would agree with Honourable Member Kenneth Mashe, the Reverend, to say it would be good to know the owners of this building, not only Reverend, not only that one, and others, because this renewal is not only for that building. Others are houses of people where pay a lot of money for the house of that particular person, and the police not going, getting improvement and the service that they're supposed to get in terms of the infrastructure. So I want to put that one, that police are really finding it difficult to move forward on this one, because this question of infrastructure does not fall within the portfolio of the police. We need to beg, we need to request, and other people, and exactly, they would not see things as we do. That's my first response to the question of the buildings. Chairperson, National Commission, the members will answer. I want to take a bite on this thing of statistics. Chairperson, the statistics, I think it was reported to the chair on Wednesday that the statistics would be responded or would be released on Friday. But not given, I agree, and not given to the portfolio committee, I agree. But to say no with everybody might not be very, very correct. That's the first point. The second point I want to make about statistics is the old discussion. Is the one point that I want to demerit. The point to say we are undermining the portfolio committee. No, we're not undermining the portfolio committee. And the portfolio committee members, they know that. There are outstanding issues that we need to sort when it comes to the release. I think Honorable Fagu hit the nail on the head on that one. It should not be as if the ministry is undermining the committee on this one. This thing of dealing with the portfolio committee is new, Chairperson. If you check the history of the statistics, was started by this ministry in 2018. It has never happened before. But we tried to put the conditions that did not win. In the first meeting, Chairperson, we requested that it should be on the closed committee. That was refused. By the time we went for the statistics, it was all over. Journalists could not, some of them could not even come because it's a portfolio committee live. So then it's not released by the ministry. It's released by the portfolio committee and all of us. They were briefed as we spoke. Those that were not there, they were receiving messages and all that. I want to repeat, Chairperson, that matter should be resolved, and this ministry has no problem to discuss those statistics before they go there, as long as that matter is resolved. But Chair, on as I've said, that is not a new matter, has been discussed, and it has not found the answer. Chairperson, I agree with you on the section 54, but all laws are read with other laws. So it will help us to discuss this matter going forward, Chairperson. Chairperson, the South African police statistics has become official, as we have announced before, that they are giving quality assurance by the SG, Statistics South Africa. And the Statistics South Africa is abided by the United Nations principles. And I want to repeat, we don't have any problem discussing this so long they are protected before they are announced. Because if you go to the assessment framework of the Statistics South Africa, which subscribes completely to the United Nations conditions. If you go to United Nations quality indicator, they will say to you at 5.6, statistics release is made available to all users at the same time, Chairperson. So we have to honor this United Nations principle number one. When we go to the portfolio committee, they are protected. The same members in the portfolio committee, they release them as we put there, and then it violates this United Nations. So we want to make a call, Chair, to say, let's discuss this matter, let's find an amicable way, and all of us will immediately comply. But not only the ministry that must comply, portfolio committee must also comply on this matter. That's a call we want to make on this statistics, because there seems to be an issue of undermining questions, not true. But themselves, Chairperson, they can be explained. They are there now. I heard the figures you read. Those figures you read, they are read in collaboration, Chairperson, of which was not made in reading those figures there. Maybe when we discuss them, as the Chair has said, they need to be discussed, we will be able to read them in collaboration with other figures as it has been explained in the narrative and themselves. So I want to put that one. Chairperson, let's finalize this matter of the safety of these statistics before they are released. And as the United Nations will be part of us complying, otherwise they cannot be the official. So I request that we do that quick so that the other dates as they come, of which those are public dates, by the way, to say this will be released this date quarterly, that date, all of us will do have those dates, and then they will be consolidated once at the end of the year. But I would like to have that meeting so that we close this chapter, we comply, all of us, when we deal with this. So I'll end there, Chairperson, and call on because we're not under the second one, the forensic, and call on the National Commission then to come on the other answers. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Honourable Chair.
Yes, Honourable Khrunova.
Honourable Chair, just on a point of order, I just want to ensure that there's no misunderstanding. Honorable Minister, your predecessors from Minister Nhleko, Mbalula, and everyone, they first gave the statistics, and we had a discussion at the Portfolio Committee on Police on the crime statistics, and then they went to the media. Now, Chairperson, I want to ask that we keep and ensure that that happens. The Honourable Minister is accountable to Parliament, not to the media. With great respect, Minister, I differ with you on that one, that we as members of the Portfolio Committee must receive the statistics, it must be discussed, and it happened actually that from the Portfolio Committee, the Minister and the General, the Commissioner, or whoever is involved, they go to where they address the media. And Chairperson, I would request that we get back to that system where the members of the Portfolio Committee first receive the results. And yes, I said, I welcome the trend from the Honourable Minister that we now receive quarterly crime statistics. We didn't receive that before. So for that, I said that I appreciate it. That's what we want. But Chairperson, we cannot just go to the media and then I must hear that, wow, the minister is going to release the crime statistics. I think just that we should get the order of the release of the crime statistics correct. And I want to emphasize, Honourable Minister, you are accountable to Parliament, to this committee, in the first instance. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Honourable members, we are treading on very dangerous ground. I've asked all members who speak here to be acutely aware of the fact that this is a parliamentary meeting, and if you mislead the committee, it will have serious consequences. On the 18th of August, I received a message from the minister's PLO that the members of SACS, the public and interested parties, this was your advert, are encouraged to view the release of the crime statistics via the social media channels, and you gave your social media channels. The crime statistics were on the 20th of August. This invitation was to members of SAPS, members of the public, and interested parties. So are you telling me that we fall under the public or that we are interested parties? That is total disrespect for this committee. I am acutely aware of the discrepancies in what we are saying here, and I will take those discrepancies offline. Honorable Faku, and then Meshu.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chairperson, I wanted to plead with the meeting, especially with the minister. Just remember, we had a conversation before about this issue of crime stats, and the honorable members are saying that the crime stat must come to the committee because SAPS accounts to the committee. I wanted to plead with everyone in the meeting. I understand this is a very sensitive matter. We have committed ourselves as honorable members that whenever the crime stats are sent to us, the crime stats would not be shared to any media house or to ever. But as part of our responsibility, the stats supposed to be reported to us so that we also have a responsibility as members of Parliament to account to the public. So the question that was raised, that we're asked questions sometimes, but we can't respond. I just wanted to ask Chair, perhaps we just summarize on this matter that the crime stats must be reported into the committee before it goes to public. because it must not be seen that we are fighting about something that we all have a passion to fight crime. So I just wanted us, Chair, to just plead with one another that this is a very sensitive matter. Can we please move on by agreeing that the crime that will be reported to the committee? Thank you, Chair.
We have a proposal that the crime stats will be reported to the committee, Honorable Mesha.
Chairperson, I obviously support that. Now, if the minister is concerned about information that is leaked to the media before his media conference, then he needs to emulate what the finance minister does. Before the finance minister comes to give his budget speech, he always, and this has been taking place for years and we have never had a complaint from the finance minister, he briefs members of the committee in a closed meeting. And after that briefing, then they all go to the National Assembly. So the minister must look at how they do it and then try and implement what works for them. But for the committee to be denied information because of fear that the media might get the information before the minister has a press conference is totally unacceptable. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. General Sithole, can you continue with your responses on the first presentation, please?
Chairperson?
Yes.
If I could explain myself on this one. That is, the members are saying exactly what I said. To say absolutely there is no problem to brief the committee. The history is that that request that the Reverend Mesh is talking about was made to close the committee, that was refused. We are simply saying, if we can get that luxury of briefing the committee, that could be done yesterday, so that, as Honorable Member Fago says, the responsibility is for all of us that they are safe, those statistics, before they are formally and officially released. If we close on that one to say, yes, it will be briefed, under the conditions of the safety of them, we have no problem to do it yesterday.
General Sithole?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And I would also like to take the opportunity to express appreciation to the Honorable Members for both the questions and guidance given. Chair, I would then take the strategic questions and the operatives, I think with your permission, they will then be allowed to respond to the operational questions. Chair, I just need to start by adding on the question of the building. The minister has made it very clear, but the plea, Chair, I want to make is just support to motivate members of the South African Police Service, because this thing of the building really destroys their morals. Because we always come and account and get reprimanded for sins that we did not commit. Firstly, the implications. The members there are traumatized. They are living in the trauma every day. Yet there's pressure for us to improve on the firearm control. And as it is indicated, the current legislation provides that public works takes decisions pertaining to these buildings, doesn't even provide for any consultation with us. So, and the State House report, which has also been cited by one of the honorable members, I think has been compiled, because I personally raised the problem of buildings in SARS. And we requested that if there could be an inter-cluster meeting, we can then be able to provide also this report to our committee as and when we get that particular direction. But the seriousness of this particular matter does not only affect CSR. And I can give an example. At one stage, one day, I had to stand at Engobo, where five of our members were shot dead. And the most contributing factor was the building design, because from the time people enter by the gate up until the closest window, which is 2 meters away from the members, they can't see who is coming into the police station. So that building design is wrong, and the members are becoming victims. There's several reports where dockheads has been stolen in the DPCI offices and quite a lot. So I think this problem is far more deeper than its surface with the CFR, but it has got the biggest bearing on our functionality and as well as trying to provide a response to the current problems of CFR. I still want to make a plea for support of the committee on this particular matter because of legislation in the matter. But the minister has also put it forth. Then, Chair, I also wanted to respond on the report, on the delay of the report. I think, Chair, I have called the parliamentary reporter, the Major General, because, Chair, it's not for the first time he raised this. He also raised it in the previous meeting. I have given clear directives to say that if for each and every report required by Parliament, as and when we are busy generating the response, we will also have to indicate, because some of the information we have obtained from the divisions, which is the shortest value chain. Some, it must go down to the provinces. Maybe all 9 provinces must contribute towards that report. Sometimes it has to go down to stations. So those are there's different deadlines that we must also give ourselves, but we can then request to the committee to say, we're asking for this reasonable time because this is where this report is gonna be turning. But I think 3 months is unacceptable. And I have also indicated that there should be a direct reporting to me if there's any retarding of any progress so that I can take action. So we're going to apply consequence management where there's an unexplained delay. Then, Chair, the employment or the promotion of 3 people. I just want to indicate, Chair, that during the time, the reporting period, it's a period on which the recruitment process was on suspense as a result of COVID-19. But then the promotion process, we could unlock it. That's why it's spoken to here. But from the latest COVID-19 resolutions, we have unlocked to a certain extent the recruitment, more specifically for forensic. But I've also issued further instructions, Chair, that we make a special arrangement for the transfer and redeployment of forensic capacity, which was placed outside forensic, to take it back to forensic so that we can resolve the current problem or challenge which is faced. Then, Chair, on the part of the system, again here, Chair, by law, this matter is in the hands of CETA, and the but we have got a good cooperation, working cooperation with CETA. And Peter has indicated that the process starts now, 1st November, and after that it will be running for 3 years. The contract will be running for 3 years and ending on 2024. But it's starting this particular operational year. So we will then be working together with them so that we enhance and fast track the process. But as subs, we cannot determine and decide when is the date this would be operational. It must come from SWITA. Then, Chair, there was concerns about the workshop. I just want to, I think training and development or HR will provide more flesh to this, but I just wanted to relate to standing instructions within the organization with regard to in-service training. I think no matter how many times people are trained, but in-service training is a continuous training process for us to make sure that members don't lose touch and that they continuously maybe absorb new development and their capacity. And at the same time, we also continuously cater for the changing service promise from the client and also then just try to make some enhancements. Then the name of the building owner, I think we may make it available, but from a legal perspective, it's most advisable that it comes from Public Works, because we do not necessarily tamper with the procurement processes that fall within Public Works, but if it comes to a push, we can ask Public Works to avail it to us for all the buildings anyway, so that we can make this available. But we avoid contact with the owners of building. The rest of the questions, Chair, then they will be answered. Or maybe just the last one is on the access control at subs 13. And the instructions related there. I think from a risk management point of view, we do continuous risk assessment processes, irrespective of which measures we have put in place, because there's changing modus operandi and there's new risks that are coming to the fore, so that we can update the risk register and the enterprise risk management action plan in order to make sure that we respond. So it's not to say we are starting something anew, but it's a continuous process of making sure that we strengthen the internal control framework and risk management. With your permission, Chair, I think I can give the floor firstly to Lieutenant General Masemula, but he may also then indicate from his team who else would be responding. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. You may continue.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members, Minister and DM and National Commissioner. Honorable Chairperson, in terms of the safekeeping of firearms at the police station, we know the directive from 2018, but however, we emphasize certain functions within that directive to say station commander, supervisors, they should do first and second line inspection, meaning that supervisors must do a check of the firearms on a daily basis, and the station commander and his management once a week. By doing that, in case there's any illicit, they will be able to pick it up immediately, both firearms that are used by members as well as those of the SAP 30. And of course, access is strictly restricted. Yes, we know that we have certain bad apples somewhere, and where there is illicit activities happening, we do take action. In Norwood, unfortunately, the member committed suicide, but in other police stations in the previous where members did some illicit activities within the SAPC environment, we did take action. Offhand, I can remember Saudi, we did fire the member who was responsible there, and he was imprisoned. We also, in Inanna, I know a couple of years ago, we arrested the member that was working the SAPC. In Bath Plus in Mpumalanga also, there was a member that was fired. Still, the criminal case is not yet finalized. So that's what we say. We made sure that the station commanders ensure that there is not too many firearms that are kept in the front line to avoid criminals that might take the opportunity to rob or steal those firearms. Honorable Chair, in terms of the matters of workshop on polythene workshopping, just to explain there, in the past, Honorable Chairperson, we had the application. When you apply for either a renewal or firearm license, you would pay a specific amount, and the receipt number will then be written in your application. It was done manually. From audit perspective, internal audit, they advised us that we should look at linking the two. And the payment of the money was then linked on the firearm system, so that you can't process somebody's firearm application if the same system don't tell you that money has been paid already. In the past, it was done separately. You pay, you get a receipt, the receipt number goes and on your application. But since May last year, the system then has been linked. So it is automatically, in other words, the EFRS system, the firearm system is linked to the financial system, meaning that it will take the information from that side. So this workshop started May last year. We had a plan to workshop everybody, but we couldn't finish the workshopping of members, which is still under the process. We have few provinces to finish now to train the cashiers and the DFOs, so that everybody then is on par. In terms of the question where there was no destruction of firearms in provinces like your Eastern Cape, Northwest, and so on, what we do, Honorable Chairperson, members, before we destroy firearms, a team from National go and audit the specific province. You would recall that 3 destructions before, Limpopo was not there in the destruction of firearms. So as the national team goes, audit, and once it's finalized, it's only then that we take those firearms to be destroyed. But if we haven't done that process, there are still outstanding matters, be it ballistic reports outstanding. They've not yet received them, so we do not then destroy the badge of that specific province. So that is the case in terms of those. The issue around ammunition for Eastern Cape, I don't have answers of hand, but what I know is that what happened mostly in Eastern Cape, a lot of ammunition which were used were not written off on the system. And in terms of the supply chain policies, if there is any shortage, you open a case and investigate. Some of those, I don't say all, but some of those ammunition, the ammunition that were used by police members going for training and were not written off on the system. So that admin, I know it was worked backwards. It's just that I don't have all the answers at hand, Honorable Chair. In terms of how many firearms handed in of foreign origin, Honorable Chair, majority of the firearms in South Africa are of foreign made. They are imported and sold locally. Offhand, your firearm like your R5 and the R4, which is used by defense, R5 used by SAPS, those are firearms that one knows they are manufactured locally in South Africa. But majority of your handguns are all foreign. In terms of personnel at CFR, Honorable Chair, we are impacted. As you are aware, that SAPS, we haven't trained police the last year, and now we currently only now have people that are just coming out of the college, about to come out. But we are on priority list, but because of the unemployment that we have now, the only process will be roping Peter to pay Paul. But we are prioritized by the support services for enlistment. In terms of firearms recovered for which were involved in crime, currently we have the firearms that we know that were in load, but not necessarily that they were amnesty firearms, but they were firearms that were involved in crime. There was a question around slide number 6 of the presentation that dealt with the 91 firearms that have been captured. Honorable Chairperson, if I go to that slide 6, if they can show it or if I can explain it, what it indicates is that, as I said, we have got 165,715 firearms for amnesty handed in, for both the two amnesties. So over 2,000 of these firearms have got some problems in the capturing, which are called preferences. By preferences, what it means, the 2,381 firearms, as they are depicted there, it means that when these firearms were captured, in one or another, either the barrel or the made of the firearm was captured wrongly. So as the process of licensing has to take on, the firearm can't be taken on stock because, for example, if I will talk about a Z88 Beretta, 9mm, if you can capture it, Z88 Beretta, and you say 7.65, it means you're going to have a problem because that firearm is 9mm, not a 7.65. 7.65, you only find it under rifles, for example. So those are the firearms that then head office and the provinces are dealing with them to rectify. So of those firearms that are under that category, is that number 2,381. And of those firearms, 91 of them of the first amnesty have then those outstanding matters have already been finalized. For the second amnesty, there is still a number that is outstanding, which is 808 or 818 that is still have to be finalized, and 1,629 of the second amnesty have been finalized. So, which then take our total from where we were in May of 47,409 and 114,205 respectively to 49,063 and 116,652, total being 165,750. I think those were the questions raised, Honorable Chair. I don't know if General Mamutete wants to add any matter that I might left out. Thanks, Honorable Chair, with your permission.
Thank you very much, Lieutenant General Mofimola. If I could see General Vuma, you have your hand up.
Yes, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you very much, Honorable. Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, to the Minister of Police, the National Commissioner, and our Deputy Minister, and all Honorable Members. I just wanted to paint a picture, Honorable Chairperson, with regard to the issue of capacity, in which where National Commission has already alluded to, as well as General Masemola, to say that, yes, it is true that over a period of time, we have not been able to recruit in the organization. And the Honorable Chairperson and members will remember that in 2019, the President pronounced that SAPS will employ 7,000 recruits over a period of 2 years, which has not yet happened up to date. And as we proceeded last year, we had an HR plan of HR priorities where we wanted to ensure that we capacitate the organization with the necessary resources that they require. But unfortunately, during the year, there was a budgetary cut that was introduced by a treasurer in regard to compensation budget, where we needed to revisit our priorities. At a time, we already advertised more than 3,000 promotion posts that we needed to assist the organization in terms of the supervisory post, because most of the vacancies also are at a supervisory level. And for us to be able to capacitate those supervisory level, we need to do it through the promotion process. But due to the fact that there was that budgetary cut, we had to hold the process, and we have since released less than 1,000 out of those posts due to insufficient funding. We have even gone further to look at how best can we be able to capacitate the organization, where we have recruited the reservists that were just went out this month. They went on a pass out. It was, we were only be able to recruit 2,400 reservists, of which we are also planning to get another 1,000 in the next few weeks that will also go through the college based on the same challenge. And we are also planning to recruit in the next financial year 2,000 within the organization, where we shall be recruiting Public Service Act officials just for us to be able to top up their salaries rather than starting from scratch because of the pressures that we have in terms of the compensation budget. So it has not been easy for us to be able to capacitate all these environments. However, with the minimum and the little resources at our disposal, we are prioritizing CFR as well as the forensic and other environment. This is what I wanted to add, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Do you have any Honorable Deputy Minister, you have your hand up?
Yeah, no. Thanks, Chair, and thanks to members of the committee, Minister, National Commissioner, and the management. We really appreciate the opportunity that you have given us. I fully agree with the sentiments of the Minister that from the ministry and the department, there is no view or a discussion that was arrived at intended not to respect the committee. I fully agree with him that we have always respected the committee and we have always availed ourselves to appear before it, both the minister, myself, and the National Commissioner and the police management. And I thought it will be important that we must emphasize that point, but also to talk to the issues that both the minister and the national commissioner spoke to, which was a point raised by Honorable Mishwe with regard to our visit to Veritas building and what were our impressions. The minister has correctly said it is not ideal, and we have initiated processes with Public Works for the staff to move from that place. I can attest to that, and I agree with your observations that it's not conducive to work. And besides that, our files that have piled the passages and boardrooms in that place further makes it a death trap. If anything happens there, I don't want to contemplate what will happen. I did indicate to the members of the committee last week when we appeared before you that sometimes when we raise the challenges of COVID, one member today was even saying, I think it's Honorable Grunewald, that don't tell me about COVID. I want to know this. Well, I understand why members have reached the stage where they have taken that post. But it is a fact and a reality that COVID is impacting negatively on our day-to-day operation. When I spoke, I was relating to my visit to the Telkom Towers, wherein I went to check the state of readiness of the building. And that day, people who went there, a greater number of them tested positive, and they had to close the operations, the work that they are doing on the building, and everybody involved had to quarantine for 14 days. And that was not the first time where you have had such an experience. And this is an experience that goes throughout the South African police space, be it police stations, be it the laboratory facilities where we process DNA, central firearm registry place, including Maupanaga, where National Commissioner is working from. From time to time, our offices get closed. Personnel get quarantined at home for 14 days because there is mandatory that you must isolate. So COVID is impacting negatively on the work that we do. But we are doing everything in our means to move those employees from Veritas Building to Telkom Towers. But the major stumbling block is public works. And the minister have said twice meetings were postponed where we're supposed to meet with her, not out of her own making, but because she has contracted this virus. And I think we must, all of us, the committee and ourselves, must be appreciative of this problem we are faced with. But it doesn't mean we must not account to the things that we are supposed to do. And we must also not justify our failures because of COVID. We need to rise to the occasion. Lastly, Chair, there was an issue which I think I heard it here for the first time about General Mamteti, who is in the firearm space. I want to say to your chair and the committee and everybody who's listening to the platform, she is one of the most hardworking officers within the South African police, and she is doing everything possible to resolve the problems that are there. And we have explained what are these problems. She did not create the problems. And if there are issues that members of the committee have that have got to do with any member of the South African police, they must also make us aware about such a thing so that we can take it up with the National Commissioner or the concerned member. As we speak, we haven't picked up problems around this space, and I have interacted with her on several occasions, and what I've seen and what I've experienced in those interactions was professionalism on her part. It's just that people who are frustrated because of the licenses, sometimes, you know, people who have had a particular experience with an institution, they will take it up on certain members, even though they are not necessarily the cause of the problem. But I'm not saying there are no mistakes that she might have committed, but I just thought it will be important that given our experience and how we have worked with these officers, we know them, we know their attitude towards their work, and she's one of those who are highly committed. And I thought it will be appropriate that as we respond, we mustn't leave this thing hanging so that if it appears like we have got one element amongst us who does not want to do her work, she does her work, and I think challenges that are there are challenges that we within the South African police, myself included, and the National Commissioner and the Minister, everybody, we need to rise to the occasion to deal with this challenge that has made us to come and appear before you, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Deputy Minister and Minister, we have a very challenging situation when we say certain things in the portfolio committee and seemingly we don't listen to one another. I'm going to apologize to General Mamutiti, but I raised the matter of the emails we are receiving, the staff are receiving, and that we can hardly do our work because we are receiving all these complaints about firearms. I raised it with COSA, I raised it in this committee, and I continue to raise it to say, please, we cannot work like this. We cannot receive all these complaints. Now, if the members of the public believe that they are going to receive a response from the committee and hence they all write directly to the committee, it becomes very impossible for us to do our work, for us to do our oversight work. So I'll apologize formally in this meeting to General Mamutiti, but when I receive another letter, I am going to be extremely annoyed. Dr. Kinis receives, he can hardly do his work. Babalwa can hardly do her work. I speak for the staff. We're struggling to do our work because we have to respond to emails on a daily basis. So we are repeating the same things. I'm tired of repeating myself. I'm tired of members being completely annoyed with me because they believe I am letting you off the hook. I'm tired of it, and I want to state it in this meeting. Could we have the responses on the next presentation, please?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I'm sure with the lead of the Minister, I would then proceed and he may come in later to summarize. Chair, I think there's several concerns raised by members, by Honorable Members. Firstly, I will take the question of the different format. We have taken note and we are going to work out a final format, but we'll also consult with the parliamentary staff and the where it is extremely necessary, we will also consult with Honorable Members just to get the inputs, but we are going to then change the format and report according to what Honorable Members are expecting from us. I would like to apologize for the fact that the format is confusing Honorable Members. Then secondly, Chair, there was a proposal of a monthly report. From our side, we support the recommendation. We will await the directive of the committee. And then in terms of dates, when exactly should we provide this particular report? Then, Chair, there was also a question with regard to whether is the backlog eradication fully operational. I would like to explain this thing in this way, Chair, to say, I think firstly, by the time we produce the action plan for both the backlog and as well as attending the new cases, We did all that within the 50% COVID-19 arrangement. And we also then at the same time started the process of the public-private partnership arrangement. But the anticipation was that the public-private partnership arrangement was gonna absorb the whole backlog so that our normal capacity deals with the new cases. But what I would like then to confirm is that the 50-50 arrangement is not working for us in order to complete all new cases. While we are working on the new cases, we still also then reach quite a lot of outstandings, which then overlap into the backlog. So in terms of the measures or the instructions that I have issued, one, I said, let us change the 50-50 arrangement since it is not working. But I have instructed that we start an urgent SSSPC process for the introduction of the SHIP system so that we are able to deal with the daily standardized figure twice. And then we can be able to make an impact and make sure that there's no new case that crosses to the backlog. And then we can deal with the backlog. So that is directive number one. So this is led by Lieutenant General Luma, the Deputy for Corporate Support, and they will be taking it through the SSPC because it's a labor matter, but with agency attached to it. The second one, Chair, I have also then issued an instruction to say, can we get a date when and how many of the private laboratories will start to be operational? And the report I got was that two will begin to be functional by the 1st of October, which then means from that date, the normal subcapacity will no longer deal with the backlog, will only concentrate on the normal cases or the new cases. And in that particular manner, we will then be able to reduce both the backlog and also deal with that is the new cases. At some other point, I did interact with Dr. Judy, who's leading that particular process, and as well as General Sin Tumule. I got the commitment there to speed up that particular process. Then, Chair, we've also taken note of the fact that we need to put the correct facts in terms of our presentations. Together with the minister, we are working on fast tracking the appointment of the new Deputy National Commissioner for Crime Detection so that the Deputy Provincial Commissioners will always sit and go through the presentations before they produce a new presentation. But this principle is going to be built into direction where they will also then come and confirm to me that all the other presentations before has been verified and information has been aligned. So, Chair, I think those are the one other thing I've instructed the Integrated Resource Committee to work on the resource requirements for the shift system. So I think there's few support that members are going to need there, including the budget and overtime issues. Then we are working on that so that that support is available immediately and all the support role players are there. And lastly, Chair, on the guidance also and direction of the minister, we have assembled a committee of science experts to work together with the existing functionaries to provide the scientific guidance on how we can provide a response to this and sustain the matter forward. But 1st October, we'll start with the two laboratories. I'm told they can absorb or they can do up to plus minus 5,000 cases per day. And we will then be working on adding far more other laboratories so that we provide a response to the backlog. Chair, with your permission, I would then give the floor to both Lieutenant General Vuma and General Sin Tumule, and then need to take other responses. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. You have exactly 10 minutes to respond. You still have 10 minutes left to respond.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. This is General Vuma. There was a question from Honorable Sarah Blanche with regard to the contracts that have been concluded and those that are still outstanding. We have since concluded 14 contracts that are active since last year, March, up to date, and 6 are under evaluation as we speak. And in as far as where we could not get some of the consumables and items, we have since received a delegation from National Treasurer. The delegation from National Treasurer is giving us up to a 1 million to acquire goods and services over quotations, which we are giving forensic services, the entire 1 million, as compared to all other business units, with understanding of the issues and challenges that are being experienced in that particular space. The other issue, obviously, the Deputy Minister has alluded to it, is the days that have been lost with regards to the isolation of people being infected by the pandemic. However, as the National Commissioner has already alluded to the fact that we have already activated, because the issue of working in shift is part of the condition of service that requires to be negotiated at the SBC. By all organized labor. That process is underway, and there is positiveness of supporting us from labor organizations. It will be concluded before the end of this month, and all other shifts will be implemented as soon as possible. I will allow General Simule to respond on those that I did not touch. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to respond to the following questions, noting that the Health Commissioner has already covered ground on a lot of them. The question in relation to Honorable Shendeli, his question was around the reason why there are no white numbers. Those who are remaining are not vaccinated.
General, can you hold on? The chair is speaking. Just hold on and listen to the chair.
It's just the sound that's a bit bad. There's an echo. Can we try again? Let's try again.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. The question in relation to the vaccinations is that the remaining members, who are about 140 plus members, actually preferred the Pfizer as opposed to the J&J. And at the time of the request, the Pfizer was out of stock in the country. But Polmed, together with MedScheme, are working on acquiring Pfizer for the members to be vaccinated. The question of Honorable Meshwe on the timeline for the completion of the backlog, which says 2021, November 12th, Honorable Meshwe, it's a mistake. It's supposed to be 12th November 2022. That is the time it will take for us to go to a zero backlog. I'm going to ask, General Mavundla to respond to the question on the optimal functioning of the FEM system. And then Brigadier Ras also will touch on the issue of calibration as also asked by Honorable Funabout. Thank you, Chair.
You have 5 minutes. Could you also allow, Honorable Whitfield, you had your hand up. You can ask your question.
Chairperson, thank you. Sorry to come in at this point. It was really just whether the public-private partnership will be dealing with the reference samples or crime scene samples. I think it's important for the committee to know and to be able to make that distinction. Thank you.
Thank you. Could you please respond to that question as well?
Thank you, Chairperson. The GBVF partnership will be working on your outstanding GBV casework index or your crime index. That's your CI lane, but also they'll be also assisting us in relation to the reference index that your Booker samples. So that is the twofold approach that you're going to do with the GBVF. Sorry, thank you, Chair.
Do you have any further responses? Minister, Deputy Minister?
Chairperson, we believe that the question of partnership, as Honorable Wolfie asked, will really work. I don't know. As I've said, that my signal wasn't too good. I don't know if it has been said that we do work with the NPA. I think it was a question raised by Honorable Groenewald, with the NPA to try to speed up those that they believe need to be speeded up and the opportunities and the flow going forward on the outstanding and the backlog. And we believe that if all is put in place as we are working towards that, as the General Zuma said, that 14 of these contracts are there, others are under review. The public, the public partnership and private, if all is put, we still believe that the period that we have put will be worked on. Chairperson, let me take the opportunity to correct something that has been said, which is not very correct. Not a single minister ever discussed statistics with the portfolio committee before the release. Either Ntlego, either Mthethwa, either Mbalula is absolutely not true. The first one was said. I want to make that because this is a public meeting so that the public doesn't go with the wrong impression. It's never happened. And it's only started on it. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister. The Minister has spoken, so I'm not going to give the opportunity to the Deputy Minister. Colleagues, that brings us to the end of today's meeting. We are still going to the House, so we need to get ourselves moving, and we'll ensure that the debate runs smoothly today. The Minister is also participating in the debate. So good luck to all those members who are participating in the debate. The next meeting would be tomorrow at 9 o'clock. I wish to thank all the members who participated. Thank you very much for your inputs. Today was a tough meeting, I know that. But these two areas, the Central Firearm Registry and the forensic science laboratories. I think it's a very weak spot, and we'll leave no stone unturned until we have corrected these two divisions in SAPS. We cannot say that we are fighting gender-based violence, and then the cases cannot be brought to court. It's an indictment on us as women. It's an indictment on us as SAPS. And this committee will work very hard to create a more positive picture for SAPS. Right now, communities do not have all that faith in us, and this has to be corrected. The meeting is now adjourned. We'll have our next meeting tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Thank you very much, Minister, Deputy Minister. Thank you very much, National Commissioner. Thank you, Honourable Members.